Give me two claps and a Ric Flair. Woo! Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, you are currently tuned into the pulse of anything and everything Atlanta sports. You are tuned in to the Chop Spot, and I am your host, Jay Linderman, welcoming each and every one of you out there in podcast land to our show today. Whew, we have a doozy. Why? It's the end of the month. That can only mean one thing. The Chop Spot sports movie review. Almost caught me slipping there. Sports movie review, and boy, do we have a good one this week. As a matter of fact, I'm going to give you two hints. Hint number one, it is directed by the late, great Tony Scott. If you recall, we did a Tony Scott movie last week with The Fan, or last month with The Fan, starring Robert De Niro and Wesley Snipes. Yep, so we decided to do one more. Maybe it won't be the last, but we had to bring this one in. So it's directed by the late, great Tony Scott, and it stars, here's your second hint, it stars the legendary Bruce Willis. And I'm going to leave it there. All right. But we do have some other stuff to get to today. We have some NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs action that we need to go over. And of course, we have some great and wonderful Atlanta Braves news. And we're bringing out a new segment this week. That's right. It is called Jay's Big Plays, where I will be choosing three MLB games this Friday night. So maybe you can line your pockets. But in the meantime, we do have to start the show off on a somber note. Yes, Atlanta Falcons fans, number two, Matt Ryan, Matty Ice, has officially retired. Yep, he is done playing the sport of football after spending 1 year in the booth with CBS last football season calling games. I guess he figures it was time. But you know what? It was. 38 years old. Played 14 seasons with Atlanta, one with Indianapolis. Outstanding career. And I love the guy to death. I think he is probably the greatest Atlanta Falcon of all time. Matt Ryan just on Monday signed a one-day contract to retire as an Atlanta Falcon. And I did see his press conference. And yes, your boy here did get a little bit misty. Love the guy. Okay, so what I want to do from the top here, I want to take a quick look at Matt Ryan's career, because let's face it, the last few years in Atlanta, they weren't very good, but his stats were still good. His stats were still there, that the team sucked ass. That's what happened. And then they brought in Art the Clown, Arthur Smith, and we know the history from that. Anywho, so Matt Ryan was drafted in 2008 with the number 3 overall pick in the NFL draft. And Matt Ryan could not have come to Atlanta at a better time, because at that time, the franchise was at its lowest point, in my opinion. They're coming off the whole Michael Vick dogfighting scandal. So they had to start the 2007 season with quarterback Joey Harrington and brand new head coach at that time, Bobby Petrino. Bum. Bobby Petrino is also the coach that left that same season before the regular season was even over, about 3 or 4 games left, left the team by leaving a note on the locker room door saying he was out. Yeah, true filler right there, buddy. Anywho, so Matt Ryan came into a situation with Atlanta where they were at their lowest point, and he made an immediate impact. His very first pass as an Atlanta Falcon was a touchdown. Game one. Week one, 2008 NFL season against Detroit. Boom, Michael Jenkins, touchdown. So in his rookie season, the Falcons went 11-5, and he threw for 3,440 yards, 16 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. He had a quarterback rating of 87.7. Not great, but the Falcons at that point had built somewhat of a team around him. Just all of a sudden, with new head coach Mike Smith, they brought in running back Michael Turner. You had wide receivers Michael Jenkins and Roddy White, and you had some other guys too. But 2008, the Falcons went 11-5 and made the playoffs for the first time since the 2004 season with Michael Vick. Now, in the first round of the playoffs that year, they did lose to the eventual NFC champion Arizona Cardinals, whose quarterback that year is Kurt Warner, by the way. So his second season, 9-5, the Falcons did. So they had their first ever back-to-back winning seasons in franchise history in 2008 and 2009, Matt Ryan's first two seasons. Unfortunately, Matt Ryan got hurt a little bit that year and he missed a couple of games, but that is the only season where he really missed multiple games. That's how tough this guy was. People forget about that. Not only that, but looking at these stats, Matt Ryan threw, once he got out on roll in 2011, threw for over 4,000 yards for 10 straight seasons. I mean, that's nothing to shake your head at. I mean, seriously, that is some amazing numbers. Now, let's take a look real quick at the 2016 season, which was his MVP season. 4,944 yards, 38 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Wow. Quarterback rating of 117.1. That was the first year he ever had a rating over 100. Move forward 2 years later, 2018, 4,924 passing yards. So he was only 20 off from his MVP season, 35 touchdowns. He had 38 and 16, 7 interceptions, same as 16, only his quarterback rating was down, but it was only down by just a hair, only down by nine points at 108.1. Now, as I'm looking through these stats, it is incredible what Matt Ryan has done. Seriously, the first time he threw for over 4,000 yards was in 2011. Falcons went 10-6. Made the playoffs, but they got destroyed by the Giants in the first round, who ended up winning the Super Bowl that year. I forgot to talk about 2010, a year I was severely pumped up for. The Falcons went 13-3, number one seed in the NFC heading into the playoffs, but then they got destroyed by the Green Bay Packers. Yeah, trust me, that was the most heartbroken until the Super Bowl. That was the most heartbroken I'd ever been as a Falcons fan. But he started that 10-year run over 4,000 yards starting in 2011, and it went through 2020. Now, after the 17 season, the Falcons as a team started going downhill drastically. They lost their offensive line. They lost some players. I mean, they gained a new receiver at the time in Calvin Ridley, but that was about it. People were mad at him that draft for not drafting a defensive back instead of Ridley, but maybe that would have helped the team. But Matt Ryan did what he could do in 2018. Like I said, he still threw for 4,900 yards. Now, his last year in Atlanta was in 2021. Falcons went 7-10. He almost had 4,000 again. He threw for just over 3,900 yards that season, but he only had 20 touchdowns with 12 picks. The very next season, Falcons got rid of Matty Ice. He ended up in Indianapolis with the Colts and did not have a very good season whatsoever. Which is probably why he decided to go into broadcasting. His last season with the Colts, he had an 83.9 rating, threw for just over 3,000 yards. He was put on the bench a few times, 14 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Yep, it was time for Matty Ice to go. But here's my question real quick before we end this. Did Matt Ryan do enough to make the NFL Hall of Fame? That's a tough one. That is a very, very tough one, because if he had won that Super Bowl, I would say, yeah, he'd be first ballot. But now, I don't know. I mean, Dan Marino got in without a Super Bowl, but that was a different time. And Dan Marino everybody knows who Dan Marino is, of course. Never won a Super Bowl. Only went to one Super Bowl, you know, just like Matt Ryan. So who knows? Maybe Matt Ryan can get in. I don't know. I, for one, of course, I would put him in first ballot, but then again, biased. But to end it this way, congratulations to Matt Ryan on a very successful career. Thank you for all you have done for us Falcons fans in the city of Atlanta. And I'm pretty sure I will be looking at your statue in the near future standing outside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So folks, get off his ass, because late in his career, he took a beating for why the Falcons sucked, and it was not his fault. He just kept on trucking too and never missed a game. So Matty Ice, cheers, brother. Here's to you. And with that being said, folks, I'm out of breath, so I got to do it. I got to bring on my sawed-off little buddy, my brother from another mother, my partner in crime. Folks, give it up for our producer, Mr. Rennie Rico. Rennie, what's happening, my man?
Ooh, Matty Ice is gone from the league.
Oh, boy. You Eagle fans.
He's not going to make it to the Hall of Fame because he lost to the big boy Tom Brady after being up 28-3.
That's what everybody in the entire football fandom is going to be remembering of Matt Ryan for the rest of his career, or actually for the rest of his life, I should say, until they choose to honor him post-mortem. That's what's going to happen. They're going to bring up the fact that your Falcons were down, were up 28-3, and y'all let Tom Brady march down the field multiple times, despite the fact that he had 18 incompletions that hit the ground, and you still let him take that trophy right from you guys. And Matt Ryan did not do anything about it. So no, in my opinion, he does not deserve to be in the Hall of Fame despite all his accolades. That don't mean shit. In football, you win the big game, you get the big prize, and that's it. And that's all I got to say about that particular subject, because I know you're going to ask me how I feel about it.
So how do you feel about Dan Marino? He went through the same thing.
Yeah, well, his team also had the perfect season.
No, he didn't. That was in 72. Dan Marino came in the league in 83.
All right, well, then I'm an idiot, and I got that wrong, but still, you hit me with random knowledge
karma.
When I was even born.
It's karma, really. It's karma for talking, you know, trash.
I'm also willing to admit when I'm stupid. You know that. So there's not much you can do to a stupid person.
Well, that's what you get for talking trash about my boy. Yeah.
You might have got me there, but the point still remains. Everything I just said is 100% factual to the real football fans out there. You're jaded by your fandom. Nah. So,
nah. Hey, look, the dude did everything he could for the franchise. I don't care what anybody says about that Super Bowl. I still blame Kyle Shanahan, and you cannot tell me anything different.
Okay? No, so real talk. All right, listen, beyond what I just said, because that was more for entertainment. The man had an amazing career. I'm a realist. I do respect game. I do have a couple of his stats in front of me. Career completions, 5,551, 62,792 passing yards, 381 total touchdown passes. He was in the top six in total QBR seven times. He was third in total QBR as a rookie, which is amazing. I mean, he had his 2016 MVP season. You know, he's got a lot of amazing things pushing him in the right direction. So, you know, as a realist and a fan that, you know, beyond like the humor, I do got to give him his flowers. I always liked watching him play. I think he deserved his nickname, Matty Ice. He was amazing in crunch time, you know, in his moments. He just unfortunately didn't win the one that counts above all. So you deserve to get all the memes sent your way. Unfortunately, that's just how the sport is these days. That's how the internet is these days. They don't remember greatness. They remember the funny moments. So unfortunately, that's going to be his legacy.
Well, the best thing that I can honestly say about Matt Ryan is, first of all, when I was growing up, my dad, I used to talk about Falcons quarterback Steve Barkowski. Like, you know, he was God. He was the man. He was the only quarterback on earth. Told me about his games and comebacks and how he'd get hurt and keep playing. Well, that's kind of like, you know, Matt Ryan is my generation, Steve Barkowski. I get to tell my kids Matt Ryan stories. I get to tell my kids, wow, Falcons Saints games for about 10 years with Drew Brees and Matt Ryan were epic. They were outstanding. I mean, they played a few times on Thanksgiving night, and it was must-see TV around here, buddy. And I get to tell my kids that kind of thing. So I'm really proud of that. And, you know, my son does has two Matt Ryan jerseys in his closet, and I've got three myself. But yeah, man, I hate to see him go, but at the same time, when he did leave Atlanta, I understood. Yeah, because it was time to go, even though Arthur Smith was the head coach at the time, and he's still a bum.
He only did 1 year in Indianapolis, right?
Yeah, he only did 1 year. They gave him a pretty... No, they gave him a pretty big contract, and he didn't play well. But then again, he didn't have an offensive line. If you look through the years at Matt Ryan's stats, you got to have an O-line to have those stats. And there's some years where he had the stats, but he didn't have the O-line. He's out there running for his life.
Well, they gave him the same treatment they gave Andrew Luck. That's why he got out of there, too.
Yeah, he's taking a beating.
Well, what's the deal with that? You know what? You're like, you look at it like, well, I got some nice money. I could retire off of this, and I'm not taking this crap no more.
Yeah, he didn't know whether to scratch his watch or wind his ass. He got hit so much. He didn't know what was going on. Matt Ryan, maybe he'd finally said, okay, I've had it. I'm going to go to the broadcast booth.
Yeah, I think he'll have a resurgence on that end, too.
Absolutely.
I think he's going to do well. Andrew Luck, though, on the other hand, he's out there just living his own life on probably on a farm somewhere, or, you know, I think he likes to live in the rural area and do what he likes to do on his own, mind his own business, which is cool.
If that's how you want to do it.
Once you play in the public and you make all that money, you can do whatever the hell you want afterwards.
Absolutely. Okay, so we got Matt Ryan on the way. Godspeed to you, buddy, in your next career. Matty Ice, like I said, hope to see a statue up in front of Mercedes-Benz soon. But with that being said, Rennie, we have other stuff going on this week. As everyone probably knows, if you've been listening to us, then you do know, the NBA and NHL playoffs have started. The NBA playoffs, man. Playoffs? Are you ready for some playoffs? I'm ready for some playoffs.
Not anymore.
I was going to get to that, but give me a second, okay? So out in the Eastern Conference, you have the number one seeded Boston Celtics. They're playing the number eight seeded Miami Heat. Now, remember last week we had that NBA play-in tournament, and it didn't work out so well for our Atlanta Hawks as they got crushed, stomped by the Bulls in the first game. Meanwhile, Rennie's Sixers made the playoffs as a seven seed. So you got me on that one. But then again, I've been saying the Hawks have sucked since the beginning of time, it feels like. But anywho, so out east, yeah, the number one Celtics against the number eight seeded Miami Heat. Game one went to the Celtics, 114-94. Game two is actually being played as of this recording right now. The number two seeded New York Knicks are playing the number seven seeded Philadelphia 76ers. And unfortunately for you, Rennie, and all you Philly fans, the Knicks are up 2-0 on the Sixers. They won game one, 111-104. Then they also won game two, 104-101. Game three will be tomorrow night in Philadelphia. Rennie, can the Sixers come back from a 2-0 deficit?
I don't know if I hate to be this person, but this is the current happening online is, you know, 76ers fans, and I mean, actually a lot of sports fans in general are really upset about the way the officiating went down in game one, but specifically in game two. There was some calls that the NBA actually admitted that the officials missed that could have turned the tide of the game. And unfortunately, situations like that are very sensitive. It's not like you can overturn the outcome of a game. What can you do? Can you replay the game? No, that there's no precedent for that, really. But at least I don't think so. So really all we can do is just sulk and be upset. I think that overall, though, as a personal opinion and how I am as a fan, I try not to rely on that. You put away the team to the point where the ref shouldn't have an outcome or ref shouldn't play into that outcome. Of course, you know, there's things that are going to be beyond your control. That's any sport. It happens time and time again in football. It happens, you know, to some extent in baseball, but it especially happens in basketball, though.
Is it me, or does it seem like the refs are taking the game away more and more nowadays? Because I always seem like at least once a week, there's something that comes up, some situation in the game, and it's, well, the ref made the wrong call.
Absolutely. And I think that the general consensus is that I think a lot of fans just want to see less interference. Of course, if something is so egregious that you have to call it. That's what you're there for. But if you know that, you know, you have high stakes on the line, you're talking about the last minute of a game, which can have major swings, especially in a basketball game where, you know, a lead change can happen multiple times. I mean, that minute can last an eternity, it feels like, right. You know, but if they're going to stick their, you know, their hand in the pot and do some stirring around, it best believe that it better be, you know, worthwhile or be something that's, you know, to use my term I used earlier, egregious.
Right.
Apparently, what happened in the most recent game against the Knicks is that I think not once but twice Nick Nurse was attempting to call timeout. He was making all the motions, and they didn't honor his timeout. And we were up with 47 seconds left, I think by 5 points or something like that. I don't have the exact score in front of me. I think it was like 101-94 or something like that. So it's six, seven points like that. And there was some situation that happened, and unfortunately some calls were missed as far as timeouts, and I don't recall the other specific situation because I didn't actually see I'm doing a lot of this secondhand because I was at work, but I saw some of the replays, and then, you know, with the actual NBA backing up the fact that they admit that these calls were missed, you know, it kind of just makes you wonder, would this be a 1-1 series? You know, that's a different, you know, that's a completely different probability and outcome in a playoff series.
Especially, you know, with the series going back to Philly tomorrow night.
Exactly. You're going back to Philadelphia, you know, 1-1 at that point, it's anybody's series. You know, it's tied up. But now it's 0-2, you know, in Knicks' favor. Going back home, we probably feel a little dejected because of officiating and whatnot. You know, it feels like an uphill battle. At the end of the day, miracles happen and we can do it. It's not necessarily a lost cause, but it's certainly, they don't have the law of probabilities in their favor. So,
right. Yeah,
but as I've been stating, honestly, the entire time we ever even mentioned the Sixers, to me, they're a middling team anyway. I mean, if it doesn't happen in this particular series, it's probably going to happen in the next series that they're going to drop it. So, and it's not like they really had a whole lot of time with Embiid back to really get their mojo flowing. So, I don't think a lot of fans were expecting much.
With all this stuff with the refs, though, I mean, it gives you a good sense of why a lot of people think the NBA as a whole is a bad product. I'm just saying. I mean, stuff like that.
I could see it. I mean, there was a situation with LeBron just like in the last game or something like that. You know, of course, he's always crying for something. But
he's crying right now. He's at home watching Free Willy and crying right now. He's watching My Girl bawling his eyes out.
But I did see the particular situation he was talking about. He had a valid point.
Right.
And there should have been an N1 called. And that N1 could have seriously swung the outcome of the game. So, once again, officials either not calling crucial things that they normally are calling, or they're being way too aggressive with their calls. Either way, it just seems like a problem that, you know, it's going to be really an uphill battle to fix.
We shall see. But other NBA action in the Eastern Conference, the number 3-seeded Milwaukee Bucks are taking on the number 6-seeded Indiana Pacers. And as of right now, that series is tied 1 game apiece. Game 1 went to the Bucks 109-94. Game 2 went to the Pacers 125-108. So I think we got a close series there, if you ask me. Let's see, the number 4-seeded Cleveland Cavs are playing the number 5-seeded Orlando Magic, a surprising Magic team, by the way. However, the Cavs are up on the Magic 2-0. Cavs won game 1, 97-83, and the Cavs again won game 2, 96-86. And now, out to the Western Conference right quick. Like, you have the number 1-seeded Oklahoma City Thunder taking on the 8-seeded New Orleans Pelicans. And as of right now, the Thunder up 1-0. Thunder won game 1, 94-92. And a close one. I did see highlights of that game, and that was a really close one. And they did announce, the Pelicans did, that star player Zion Williamson, it could very likely come back for the playoffs. So we shall see. I'm sure Pelicans fans are wanting him back quick. The number 2-seeded Denver Nuggets, defending champs, by the way, are taking on the number 7-seeded Los Angeles Lakers. And guess what? The defending champs are already up 2-0 on the Los Angeles LeBrons. The Nuggets won game 1, 114-103, and then they won game 2, 101-99. Woo! Denver looks good, I'm telling you. Denver's actually, I think, going to be my new pick out of the West. I don't think the Pelicans are going to do it. I don't know what I was thinking a few weeks ago, picking the Pelicans to go. I mean, I hadn't drank alcohol in a long time. I don't know what caused that. Anyway, Minnesota Timberwolves, number 3-seed, are playing the number 6-seeded Phoenix Suns. Timberwolves won both games. They're up 2-0. Game 1, Timberwolves 120-95 over the Suns. And game 2, 105, T-Wolves. Suns 93, so T-Wolves up 2-0. And then in the final matchup in the NBA playoffs, the number 4-seeded LA Clippers are playing the number 5-seeded Dallas Mavericks, or the Dallas Luka Doncic. Anyway, that series is tied 1 game apiece. Clippers won game 1, 109-97, but then the Mavericks came back in game 2, and I beat the Clippers 96-93. So that is what's going on right now in the NBA playoffs. And Rennie, do you have any kind of picks you want to, predictions you want to make? You could go to the finals real quick before we move forward.
Not really.
I'm going to go with Celtics and Nuggets.
I'm a little over it.
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, at least your team made it.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to stick with that answer. You know why? Because every time you hear anyone ask anyone else for a pick, they always have something right on the spot. I don't got nothing.
I hear you.
Type of podcaster I am.
You got to think about it for a minute.
Yeah.
You're a thinker.
I don't like being put on a spot. I'm going to put in my predictions on X tomorrow.
There you go. Hey, by the way, if you haven't noticed, Chop Spot Podcast is on the Elon Musk Network X. So if you want to send us one of those tweets, that'd be cool. And we also have our Facebook.
You sound so old. Yeah, no. Get on that X and send us one of them tweets, you know?
Eastbound and down. And then of course,
I promise we got some content coming. It's a real knee slapper.
Bring out the shines. And then, of course, we have our Facebook page. Just look for the Chop Spot and look for our blue logo with the microphone. And so, enough with this shameless plug. Let's move over to the ice. Let's talk some puck real quick as the NHL playoffs have started. And out, let's see what we have here. One of the first round matchups I'm looking out here, right here, is out in the Eastern Conference where the Florida Panthers are taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning. And as of right now, the Florida Panthers are up 2-0. The Panthers won game 1, 3-2 in a very close one. I did see some of that game, but game 2 was even tighter. Final score was the same 3-2, but this game went into overtime. So I do not think that the Lightning are out of this one yet. Now, this next matchup out of the East goes back to the NHL Original Six, the Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs, old rivals. In case you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, the Original Six in the NHL are the very first six teams in the NHL. That league only had six teams up until 1969, I believe, which is why if you look in their history books, that is why the Montreal Canadiens had so many titles, because they only had to play five other teams. True story. Yeah. Anyway, Boston Bruins and Toronto Maple Leafs are going at it, and that series is tied 1-1. Boston won the game one in a rout 5-1, and then game two, the Maple Leafs came back and won a close one 3-2. Another matchup out east, the New York Rangers, the President Cup Trophy winners, are taking on the Washington Capitals, who snuck in on the last day of the season as a wild card. And on paper, it looks like the Rangers should beat them up pretty good, and guess what? They're up 2-0. The Rangers won game 1, 4-1, and then they won game 2, 4-3. Both those games were in New York, and now it heads back to our nation's capital. Out east, we had the Carolina Hurricanes taking on the New York Islanders, and Carolina's up 2-0. They look pretty strong, I'm telling you. Carolina won game 1, 3-1, and then they won game 2, 5-3. All of those games were in North Carolina. That series heads back to Long Island on April the 25th, so tomorrow night. Out west, you have the Dallas Stars taking on the defending champ Vegas Golden Knights. Vegas is actually up in that series 1-0. They won game 1, 4-3 in a close one. And actually, game 2 is tonight, later tonight, this Wednesday, April the 24th at 9:30. The Winnipeg Jets, the former Atlanta Thrashers, by the way, are taking on the Colorado Avalanche. That series is tied 1-1. And it's been a little bit more high scoring than I thought it was going to be, because Winnipeg has a great goalie in Hellebuck. Now, Winnipeg did win game 1, 7-6, but that's a lot of goals for Hellebuck to be giving up. And then he gave up 5 more in game 2 as Colorado won 5-2 in game 2. So, like I said, that series is tied 1-1. And then we have the Vancouver Canucks playing the Nashville Predators. Believe it or not, that series is tied 1-1, with Vancouver winning game 1, 4-2. Nashville coming back with authority to win game 2, 4-1. And then our final matchup out west and in the NHL playoffs, the Edmonton Oilers are taking on that Los Angeles Kings division rivals. Edmonton is up 1-0. They won game 1, 7-4. Wow, looks like a baseball score. Game 2 is actually going to be tonight, this recording, Wednesday, April 24th at 10 p.m., so stay tuned for that. Randy, you got anything you want to pick out of the NHL playoffs?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Panthers and the Golden Knights in the Stanley Cup Final.
Yeah? Going with Panthers and the Knights, huh?
Panthers and the Knights.
All right, all right. I was originally thinking the Dallas Stars out of the West, but I'm going to think I'm going to go with the Edmonton Oilers. And then out east, give me the New York Rangers. So give me Rangers Oilers.
All right.
All right. So that is the NHL playoffs right now. And very quickly, because we're running over time, we got to get some Braves news real quick. The Atlanta Braves last week, folks, when we got together, they're getting ready to start a 9-game homestand. After sweeping the Houston Astros last week out in Houston, well, they came home to start the stand, and so far it is going well, because that homestand started last Friday night, April the 19th, with the Braves winning 8-3 over the defending champs, Texas Rangers. Chris Sale was on the bump that night. Didn't look great, but he didn't look bad either, but he got the win. The Braves win 8-3. Saturday night, your boy, Jay, right here, along with my family, we were at the game against the Texas Rangers, and guess what? The Braves won 5-2. It was a wonderful night. 42,000 fans couldn't have asked for anything more. And then in game three, unfortunately, on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, where the Braves have a horrible record, by the way, they lose 6-4. Ed, about this series, Rennie, you and I have texted each other about this. Travis d'Arnaud for the Braves went off last weekend. I mean, the dude decided to show up. Travis d'Arnaud, the man we call Little D with the big stick, hit 3 home runs last Friday night, with one of those being a grand slam, and then had another one on Saturday. And I was there to see the one on Saturday, and everybody went nuts.
He's trying to copy Bryce Harper from a couple weeks ago.
Well, he's not trying to be a punk. Can't copy it. I'm just saying. So
neither of them are.
So the Rangers win that series. I hear you. The Rangers win that series. The Braves beat the Rangers in that series 2-1. And as of starting this week, they have another home series against the Miami Marlins for the second time this season. Braves won game 1 3-0, won game 2 last night 5-0, and they are currently playing as we speak. And then this weekend, the Braves are hosting another American League team. In come in the Cleveland Guardians. Okay, Indians. Cleveland comes into town for a 3-game set, and then after that, the Braves will head out west for a 6-game road trip. They have 3 in Seattle and then 3 in Los Angeles, so that should be fun. And what I wanted to bring up too, right quick, like, is some injuries and what's going on. Second baseman Ozzie Albies is hoping to return from the 10-day injury list when he is first eligible to play, which is this Friday, so we have to wait and see. Of course, we all know starting pitcher Spencer Strider is out forever. Sean Murphy, our catcher, has a strained oblique, and he has been cleared to run bases and swing a bat, so that's positive news, and that's really the biggest things for the Braves on the injury front. How are your Phillies looking, Rennie?
I think we're looking good. I mean, honestly, I think we're just right up there with you guys. Now that the season's starting to shape up, we just had about, I think, how many games at home? Yeah, like a 10-game stretch at home. We played the Pirates, Rockies, White Sox. Just Monday, we just finally left and we're away. We're at the Reds now. We were on a 7-game win streak. Last night was broke the streak. We took a really bad 1-8 loss in Cincinnati. But it's nothing to be discouraged about. I think that, you know, we're starting to get warm. We're certainly looking pretty good from the pitching point of view. Ranger Suarez is shaping up to be a third ace that we have. He's got 22 straight shutout innings, which is what everybody's ranting and raving about on local sports radio around here. So, you know, it's looking good. Just as long as we continue in the direction that we're heading in right now. And, you know, there's going to be losses, just like with your team. It happens. As long as they don't mount too much of them, I'm pretty comfortable in where we are. We're looking pretty good, and hopefully we just don't peter out at the end when it matters the most.
Yeah, I'm hoping for the same thing. We shall see.
I know Bryce Harper, I think he's actually out for just like a 3-4 days. They give him special paternity list privileges because he just had his third child. So they brought someone up. I don't recall his name. I wish I had it right in front of me. And he actually was doing pretty good too. I think he was batting like 349 or something like that. And so, you know, our replacement's doing pretty well. They did take him off first base though. They put Boehm over on first base. But we're making the right changes and we're substituting correctly. So that's all you can ask for.
There you go. Meanwhile,
still a lot more baseball to go.
Absolutely. Man, we got, what, like 4 or 5 more months of this? So
yep.
We got a ways, that is for sure. I know Braves country. Yeah, I know Braves country. We just kind of flew through the Braves stuff today, but like I said, we have some other stuff to get to. So what I want to do right now is to introduce our brand new segment, Rennie. Are you ready? Are you ready for what is being called Jay's Big Place?
I won't tell the public what I secretly call it.
Oh, Lord. So, no, we're not going over that. Anywho, so Jay's Big Place is what I'm going to do is choose three Major League Baseball games for every Friday night. Why Friday nights? Because it's just before the weekend, and I do not want to try to predict what's going to happen in a three-game series on games that are happening Saturday or Sunday. So I am choosing Friday night's games. Please keep that in mind. So here we go. Here are my first three ever picks on Jay's Big Plays. All right, my first pick of the night. We're going to look at the matchup of the Cubs and the Red Sox. The game takes place Friday night at 7:10 at Fenway Park. On the mound for the Cubs is Shota Yamaga. On the mound for the Red Sox, Cutter Crawford. Both of these pitchers have stellar ERAs. The Red Sox have great pitching. They lead the majors in the ERA department, but however, they are lacking in the power department. So they're winning games based on pitching. Cubs have more power. Give me the Cubs over the Red Sox at 7:10 Friday night. Like I said, Chicago Cubs over the Boston Red Sox. Game two, we're looking at the St. Louis Cardinals taking on the New York Mets. On the mound for the Cardinals, Miles Mikolas. He is 1-3 with a 6.49 ERA. On the bump for the Mets as someone who did not get a decision his last time out. So he's got a record of 0-0. That is Jose Buto, but he has an ERA of 1.65. And not only that, the Mets are hitting strong right now. The Cardinals are still trying to find their way. So give me the New York Mets over the St. Louis Cardinals at 7:10 Friday night. And for my third and final game, we're looking at the matchup between the Cincinnati Reds and the Texas Rangers. On the mound for the Cincinnati Reds, Graham Ashcraft, he's 3-1 with a 5.24 ERA. On the mound for the Texas Rangers, Nathan Eovaldi, he is 1-2, 3.30 ERA. Rangers can hit if they're healthy. They've had to move some players around. The Reds, they're still a little too young, but they've got some players. It was really hard to kind of pick this game, but the reason I did pick this game because of one reason. I like the Texas pitcher, Nathan Eovaldi. I think he's had a little bit of luck getting run support, but I think he does well on Friday night. So give me the Texas Rangers over the Cincinnati Reds at 8:05 Friday night. So here are my three picks. Book 'em. Chicago Cubs, New York Mets, and Texas Rangers. So parlay it, fillet it. I don't care what you do with it. Just those are my three picks. And those are Jay's Big Plays of the Week. Yay, it's done. Woo-hoo. So maybe people can line their pockets.
I will get a copy of that and I'll repost that on X so that there's, you know.
Get all that Twitters.
On them Twitters, yeah, so you don't have to rewind the pod and listen to what he's saying.
Absolutely. So, sports talk's out of the way. It's the end of the month. It is now time for the Chop Spot Sports Movie Review. If you remember the two hints I gave you at the top of the show, one is directed by the late, great Tony Scott. Two, it stars the legendary Bruce Willis. If you guessed the 1991 action flick, The Last Boy Scout, you would be correct because that is what we are reviewing tonight. The Last Boy Scout, like I said, directed by Tony Scott, starring Bruce Willis. It co-stars a young Damon Wayans, who is really kind of just starting out in Hollywood at the time. I think this was actually one of his first big breaks. But Damon Wayans is in it. And here's a familiar name, Danielle Harris, who's probably best known for playing little Jamie Lloyd in Halloween's 4 and 5 for all you horror fans out there. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, The Last Boy Scout was released in December 1991, made on a budget of $43 million. It grossed $114.5 million, so I'd say that's a pretty good investment. And I do remember, Rennie, when this movie came out, and a lot of people think it saved Bruce Willis's career. Let me tell you why. So, everybody knows Bruce Willis as John McClane, right? Die Hard, right? Die Hard 1, Die Hard came out in 1988. Die Hard 2 came out in 1990. But in 1991, he did a movie called Hudson Hawk that bombed. Have you seen it?
I haven't, but I know of it. I know that
you're not missing much. I tried to watch it, and it's like a slapstick caper. Yeah. Anywho, it bombed at the box office. It hurt his reputation. So, old Brucey boy needed to go back to the basics and get back to the action. So, he did The Last Boy Scout, like I said, released in late 1991, and it was a big hit. So, Rennie, before we get into the actual movie, you watched that movie today. What do you think?
It was certainly a 1990s movie. And it actually wasn't bad. I liked it. I think that maybe I was a little distracted today. Wish that I hadn't chose to wait to the last minute to watch it. Kind of had a busy work week and just honestly slipped my mind. But I will say that my eyes and my ears perked up a little bit when the opening credits started swinging by, and I saw Shane Black was the writer, which Shane Black is, he's had his hand in quite a few of probably our favorites mutually.
Yeah, I mean, he wrote the original Lethal Weapon with Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. He helped.
He also the story for Lethal Weapon 2. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Last Action Hero, which is a personal, like, you know, guilty pleasure of mine. Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was ahead of its time.
He was with Arnold in Predator.
Yeah. Wait, what?
He was Hawkins. He's the guy in the glasses in Predator.
Oh, he was. Oh, you're saying as the actor. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, I think he was brought in as like a script doctor or something. But anyway. But okay. Yeah, Shane Black. Yeah. Hell of a writer. Still writes and directs to this day.
He wrote two very underrated films that are like cult classics, The Nice Guys, and honestly, such an underrated movie called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Beautiful.
Featuring Robert Downey Jr., which is such an amazing movie, which I wish more people knew about. So I actually got a little more excited to watch it. His dialogue and his wittiness definitely shone through, especially towards the beginning parts that I was seriously paying attention in. I just was a little distracted today, but I thought that it was very serviceable, especially for a movie made in 1991. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just that, you know, you can definitely see the differences in time periods and eras, but I really did enjoy it. I thought that the action was done great. And of course, Tony Scott directed my favorite movie of all time, Man on Fire. So I'm always going to respect, or at least try to pay attention to anything he's done, or at least try to give it a shot.
Right. And you're talking about the opening credits of this movie. How about that opening TV theme song? That caught my attention. Friday nights are a great night for football. You can feel it in the air. You know, that's so, like, folks, it's presented. If you haven't seen the movie, you haven't, you've been living on Pluto. But the presentation is kind of like a Monday night football type thing with the opening rock song and stuff, but it definitely caught my attention. But in the first scene, the plot and the story of the movie really gets going, because you have a ridiculous scene where a player stuffs football player, by the way, football player named Billy Cole, plays for the fictional LA Stallions football team, stuffs a gun down his pants and runs out on the field and shoots a dude square in the eye.
Yeah, while with the ball, like while running,
keeps
for a touchdown.
Running for that touchdown.
And the dumbest thought I had in this movie was in that very initial scene where I was like, I wonder if they still give him the points. I don't know.
I don't think it mattered by that point.
And then remember, they showed a reaction shot of the coach, and he just shakes his head. Like, I was like, that's the most non-reaction I've ever seen for a person that just
no
went
shock.
On the field.
No shock.
And shot like three opponents away. Yeah,
but, oh man, what a way to start a movie, a suicide scene on the football field. By the way, Billy Cole is played by Billy Blanks, who found it. God, what did he found it? Was it Tybo, I think?
Yeah, it was Tybo, one of those workout.
Tybo? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyhow,
yeah.
He was in the movie. But so you have this player, Billy Blanks, that kills himself. And of course, you're spending like, why this dude off himself on the football field? So the movie moves forward, right? And we're introduced to the main character played by Bruce Willis, Joe Hallenbeck. Kind of a down on his luck, private investigator. Kind of not really scum, but he considers himself maybe a lowlife. He's in a bad marriage. His daughter hates him. I mean, your basic everybody hate on Bruce Willis type of situation that happened a lot back in the 1990s. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he's asked to do an investigation job for a good friend of his. But then the plot thickens when he finds out his best friend is banging his wife.
Sutton was getting thick.
But the dude must need money because he took the job anyway.
And luckily he got that money because a few short moments later, he was blown right in the air.
Yeah, he was blown. His friend was blown sky away. High on Joe Hallenbeck's front lawn. So now, naturally, because Joe took the job and he's a man of his word, he goes to do surveillance on a local stripper named Corey, who, by the way, is played by Halle Berry.
Looking oh so fine.
Halle Berry?
Yeah, she's easy. Halle Berry.
She's easy on the eyes, that is for sure. Stone Cold Fox. Anyway. So, well, she plays a stripper in this movie.
I didn't meet her as a stripper, though.
Of course she didn't. And it just so happens her character, Corey, is dating former star quarterback Jimmy Diggs, played by Damon Wayans. Like I said earlier, Damon Wayans, this is one of his first big breaks. By this point in 1991, he's probably best known for his role in the comedy sketch show In Living Color. I loved In Living Color, by the way. Jim Carrey was the only white dude on that show, but he was hilarious.
Fire Marshall Bell.
Yeah. Let me show you something. I love that guy, man.
You see this sucker right here?
You're pretending you're getting eaten by crabs from another planet. That's hilarious. I can't do it very well. I just sucked at that. I fucked that up. Anyway. Anyway, so Damon Wayans, like I said, his character, Jimmy Diggs, his boyfriend of Corey, the stripper, come to find out Corey is in some bad business with the owner of the L.A. Stallions, Sheldon Marcon, played by veteran actor Noble Willingham. Noble Willingham's actually been in a ton of stuff in his day. Ace Ventura is one that comes to mind. Anywho, and yeah. Right then and there, not long after Joe meets Corey in the strip club, Corey is unfortunately gunned down. She is gunned down by people at that time. We have no clue who they are. And of course, the boyfriend, Jimmy Diggs / Damon Wayans, has to get involved to solve the murder. He ends up teaming up with Joe Hallenbeck. And what we get is an action, buddy, comedy, thriller, sports movie. I don't know. There's a lot of categories here.
Yeah, so we're definitely stretching the term sports movie to suit our reviewing needs.
It takes place in the sports world, though, Rennie. We just got to get to that part.
We've already gotten to the part. We've already explained everything that has...
No, but there's more to it. It's an intricate plot. Not really. It's a 1990s action movie. It's about as dense as a piece of paper. But anyway, so they go on this adventure together to solve this crime, and they wind up in a plot that involves the owner of the LA Stallions, Sheldon Marcon, and sports gambling. So this dude's plan to take over the world is to kill off the people that do not legalize sports gambling.
Thank you, Shane Blank. Thank you, Shane Black.
Yeah. And of course, it's Bruce Willis's job to get in the way and to save the day. To save all those bad people for not voting for sports gambling. But it's fine. But I mean, there were some pretty cool action scenes in this movie. I just think that it probably should have been a little bit more of it. This one's actually got a little bit more dialogue than most 1990s action films do. Especially if you're Van Damme. You didn't want him to speak back then. Hell, you don't even want to speak now.
I think that the action was evenly paced. I think that it was good enough as far as what I was expecting and, you know, paced throughout the movie. I mean, you got that scene where basically Damon Wayans' character, Jimmy, and Joe Hallenbeck, Bruce Willis, were essentially hostage. And they're standing outside the cars, and his Joe Hallenbeck's daughter runs up.
With the puppet.
Begs him to speak with the puppet or talk with the puppet. And I was
Furry Tom.
I'm like, where the f*** is this going? And then, you know what? Bruce really, like, went for it. Like, I was actually cackling. I was laughing my ass off, I swear. And then I knew what was going to happen. I knew that there was a gun hidden in this puppet, but I was like, you know what? That's actually pretty funny. It was pretty creative. I mean, you had that scene. Of course, you know, you had the explosion in the beginning. You had, you know, Halle Berry getting blown to bits, which actually totally threw me off.
Yeah.
I did not expect that, which, you know, more power to Shane, you know, writing, you know, things to throw you off descent, essentially, because I thought she was going to be, you know, like a character I didn't realize was in the movie. I thought she was just, you know, going to be in it long term, and she surely was not. But then
I give about 5 minutes,
and I hate to just speed run through all the, you know, the most of the action in the movie, but I started, my eyes certainly were glued to the screen when they're in the stadium and Bruce Willis is up in that rafters or stand and
taking out the sniper.
Yeah. And then there's a helicopter up there and he took out this sniper and certainly did not give this man room for error to live. The helicopter blades certainly finished the job.
So, all right. So the ending of this movie was like this, like the biggest set piece of the movie, probably, especially since it's the end, but you know, it takes place at the football stadium, the LA stadium, home of the LA Stallions. And of course, Senator Boehnert, the character in the movie, is in there, and he's the senator that the LA Stallions owner wants to blow away for not, you know, legalizing sports gambling. Jeez. Did you see how the senator was saved? It is Jimmy Diggs riding on a white stallion horse and throws a football in the way of the bullets.
I must have looked away for that part. Oh my God, I can't believe I missed that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, he threw that was a 1 in 10 million shot of getting in the way of that bullet. But you know what? It saved the senator, and guess what? Sports gambling is still illegal. So, but the end of that movie, though, is like you said, there's like a little fight with Bruce Willis and the sniper who just shot his bullet into the football. And Bruce Willis is there to take him out, man. And somehow or another, they are like way up in the rafters. I mean, they got to be touching Jesus up there in the rafters for a helicopter to be under them so Bruce Willis could throw him off. And the bad guy get chopped up by the helicopter blades. And that's how the movie ends. Other than the fact that, you know, there's a scene before the end where Bruce Willis said if he survived this, he was going to dance a jig.
And I was hoping you brought it up.
He danced his jig.
And they put him up on the screen. Everybody's looking like, is he dancing up there?
Yeah. Damon Wayans said for a dancer, he's one hell of a detective.
It was a great payoff to them mentioning multiple times about the jig. I was like, why does he just keep talking about this?
Well, there's a lot of jokes in this movie. You know,
there was. It was very witty.
Now, my favorite line in the movie came as in the very beginning when we're first introduced to Hollenbeck. You know, like I said, he's kind of scum, down on his luck. He's a boozer, right? Reeks of alcohol. Anyway, we meet Joe for the first time in this movie as he's passed out in his car on the side of the street, and some little kids decide to throw a dead squirrel on him to see if he would wake up. I don't know why would you want to wake somebody like that up, but whatever, they threw a dead squirrel on him. He doesn't move, so, you know, he had a good night the night before. Kids come back, and then he eventually wakes up, scares the devil out of the kids, right? So he goes into his office, and his buddy, who's banging his wife, calls him, said, "What, Jesus, Joe, what'd you do last night?" He goes, "I think I effed a squirrel to death and don't even remember."
Yep. I was like, yeah, we're in for a doozy here. And then shortly after that, you know, he goes back home early. His wife is expecting him out of town for at least another day. And that's when he discovers that, what, that's his partner, right? Or his boss or person that hires him.
Somebody he works with, yeah.
Yeah, who's played by Bruce McGill, who's been in a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah, a ton of stuff.
But we don't know he's there. He gets to the house, and this is how they introduce Bruce Willis's detective skills. He's like, well, I noticed that the toilet seat is up, and that there's fresh steam in the bathroom, but your hair is dry. He's like, who are you screwing?
He goes, I looked under the bed, and I figured when you went under the bed, you stashed him in the closet when you heard my key hit the lock a day early.
Yeah, so once he finally realizes who it is, that, you know, after doing some grandstanding with a gun, pretending like he's going to shoot the actual closet, the guy comes out, and you're introduced to Bruce McGill's character, and then he's basically interrogating him, and he says, on your finger scale, how was my wife? And then he gives probably one of the best lines, you know, of the movie. He says, "What, you tripped, you slipped on the floor and accidentally stuck your dick in my wife?"
Oh, I'm sorry. You're gonna go with? I'm sorry, Mrs. H. It's just not my week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then which that. Just cements Bruce Willis's already longstanding Hall of Fame career. Like, you know, I'm so glad that I watched the movie at least just for that scene.
Dude, you know, you were talking about a minute ago towards the end of the movie when his daughter comes to save him by handing him the puppet furry Tom that has the gun in it so he can blast his way out. The first joke he says, he goes, "Why did the gangster cross the road? Because he had his dick stuck in the chicken."
Oh, yeah. So this movie had so many good.
Yeah. I laughed hard at that movie, to be honest with you. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
But. Hey, they don't make them like that anymore, that is for sure. This may not have been a straight-up sports movie, but it had some sports involvement, I guess you could say.
Yeah, but for sure.
It's a cheesy 90s good time. It really is. Last Boy Scout.
Shane Black at his best. Hey, I'm telling you guys, watch Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. If you like that type of humor, if you laughed at any of the little jokes we were talking about, you want to see the man at his full peak of his craft, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
There you go. Hey, and you're talking about Bruce McGill. A lot of people may know him as the sheriff from My Cousin Vinny. He was the sheriff in that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was also Van Damme's boss in Time Cop, but I think I'm the only one that knows that.
I like Time Cop, though. I haven't seen it in years.
Oh, God. Van Damme doing the splits. You can't beat it.
Nope.
I refuse to watch any Seagal movies. I'm done with Seagal. He's a turd.
Yeah, he's just not a good person.
No, he's not a good dude. At least I don't think he is. I don't know him personally. Thank God. I do know I do know he's friends with Putin.
Yeah, he's chummy. Anyway. As far as the movie overall, I thought it was, you know, pretty good. I wouldn't necessarily label it a sports movie, but it's certainly sports adjacent. To me, it just played like a pulpy noir detective movie more than anything, especially how Bruce was playing the dialogue and the dialogue that he was given. But I like those type of movies, so I've always been a fan. I like things in that, anything that relates to that. And I mean, I like movies like Brick, anything that can kind of flip the genre. So yeah, I was a good suggestion. I appreciate, you know, it being on that list. And thank God that I picked it. I liked it.
It still wasn't Days of Thunder, by the way. You still refuse to watch it.
Yeah.
I don't know why. We can't do it for a while now because we can't do three straight Tony Scott movies in a row.
Yeah.
So honestly, I forgot Tony Scott directed this when I first texted you. It went until afterwards. It's like, oh yeah, he directed that too. We just did The Fan.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that.
But anyway, it's an outstanding movie, The Last Boy Scout, 1991, starring Bruce Willis, Damon Wayans. It is a hoot. I think it's on Netflix, but I'm not positive.
No, it's no longer anymore. I looked and then it was gone. So okay.
Well, you can find it somewhere, I'm sure. Last Boy Scout is an action classic for sure. But guess what, folks? Just like P. Diddy at a country music festival, we are out of here. It has been a lot of fun. We got to go over some Brave stuff, playoff stuff, and of course our sports movie review, The Last Boy Scout. Ladies and gentlemen, it's always an honor for myself and Rennie Rico to be doing the Chop Spot with you all. Rennie is laughing at me right now.
Because of all the Diddy jokes you could have made, you made it G-rated. Like, you literally made it a soft Diddy joke.
I'm not trying to keep it vulgar up in here. Hey, send us a tweet and tell us about it. Anywho, it's been a pleasure and a wonderful time here on the Chop Spot here tonight. Please, like I said, check us out on our Facebook page and on the Elon Musk Network X. And we'll be posting some stuff and you can keep tabs on us there. So, folks, I am Jay Linderman. And for Rennie Rico right here on the Chop Spot, we thank you again for joining us tonight. And with that being said, we tell everybody to stay safe and to stay badass. Good night, America.
And don't stick your dick in no chickens.